Oh, I'm sure I did. Anything of significance happen in big group?
This.
What?
I was eavesdropping a little bit, but he apologized to Mike, and all of a sudden it was really dramatic to me. And it was especially dramatic to see Michael's face.
Michael
Melendez
was a Bible study?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he
and
was.
And he just lit up like a
Christmas.
It was just, it was marvelous.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that was already settled in before.
Well.
Is it settled?
Yeah, I mean, I apologize to him for insulting.
Okay, but it's still not settled, is it?
I don't know.
You have no proof.
I understand.
Then how can you make an accusation?
Well, I'll apologize to him again then.
I don't need to be done. It needs to be done in you.
Right.
You can't apologize if you don't mean it. That's hypocrisy.
Okay.
You're not understanding. You have absolutely no proof.
We'll have to do a Bible study on the seriousness of accusations. It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. I mean, you can't do something like that without proof, and all you have is a feeling. You're doing it again. You're shaking your head like you're agreeing, and you're sitting internally totally disagreeing. Well, you better.
What to do about it, Michael? You do this all the time. He's not talking about what you do. He's talking about what's going on inside here. You always deflect. What should I do? What's the rule? What's the application? That's bullshit.
No, I don't.
You're doing it right now.
You're in denial. No, I'm not.
What should I do about it? Next time it happens, what should I do? What's the rule?
The point of it is we must live by faith, which worketh by love. Love always has to be the predicate. Love means preferring the other person's interest over your own. You think I'm picking on you. I am vitally concerned about your spiritual condition. That's why I do it. Because you live in an illusion. You live in an imaginary world where it's peopled with imaginary beings and things and you know, it's not real. That's why I encourage you to say what's there, but then don't be surprised if it's challenged. But your mind always wants to fit it in a box. So it has defined parameters, so you can control it. It's the opposite of love. If you say you love God and you hate your neighbor, you're a liar. And by these kinds of activities of internalizing and the internal judgments, that is hate. Now, this is nothing to do with anybody else's. It has to do with how you look at life. There's a revolutionary way to look at life. And it means that my senses and my feelings and my emotions are never right. I believe all things, hope all things, endure all things. And you're trying to fit it into a box again. You're trying to fit love in a box.
I don't think I am. I think that comment though is offensive.
predicate to understanding is you have to come to a place where everything you think is wrong. Even if you don't fully understand what's being said to you, the idea that you still think that your constructs of life are correct will keep you standing. And your brokenness is what's important, not your rightness. But to you, your rightness is that terrible. You know, without that, you die.
Love cannot be defined by words. Love can only be defined by living, by actions. And it's so therefore, if you can see that, then you have to understand your desire for definitions and parameters is the opposite of love. Your desire for definitions and parameters is the opposite of love. The scripture says, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor entered into the heart of man that which God hath prepared for them that love him. That's what Paul is targeting, Isaiah 64, where it says, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor entered into the heart of men that which God hath prepared for them that wait on him. From God's perspective, waiting is the only evidence of love. Expecting the best in a person is the only evidence of love. Never being concerned with how that somebody is affecting you is the only evidence. I mean, all these are the evidences of love. For the first time in his life, Michael Melendez, no matter how much weird he is, this is the closest thing he's ever had to a home. He's like, spiritually, he's like this teeny little child that is all of a sudden he's awakening to a different possibility of life. And every once in a while he gets angry and blows up. I mean, we've seen it with Harry, we've seen it with others. But when he sees that he's accepted as he is, then something happens to him. He melts. He can go from he was going to kill Harry to loving Harry in about 2 seconds in my room when I. But you've got to see that. You've got to see his need, not your stand, not your protection. And it's the only way that this kind of the way we are makes any sense is to live like that. To always see the other person, to always think that the other person, to prefer his interest over your own. Just think of the depth that means. It means taking it down to the very, your very comfort is sacrificed for somebody else's benefit. Your privacy is sacrificed for somebody else's benefit. That's the heart of Christianity. That's the heart of everything that we're about. And it's not about, the only reason that we're about that is because we know that Jesus is Lord. Therefore, nothing can threaten me. Nothing can upset me. Nothing can put me in a feeling of risk or anxiety. And that's what I want for you. I want it for all of you. Because you know that Jesus is Lord. That everything is exactly as it should be. And if I feel upset by something, it means it's revealing some idolatry within me. In other words, I am always wrong when it comes to my how I see other people. Does that touch you anywhere? Are you still trying to figure it out?
I understand what you're saying. You don't have to like it. It's true.
Think about it. The simple statement, it says, no man can say by the Spirit, no man speaking by the Spirit of the Lord can say Jesus is accursed. Well, you said that Michael was accursed because you didn't see Christ in him. You didn't see his need, that mystery. When Jim Pinson first came here, his breath could have de-chromed the bumper. He hadn't taken a bath in 3 weeks, I don't think. He was miserable. And there was a reporter sitting on the steps when he walked up. And that so blew away that reporter that we accepted him as a human being and as a person of extreme value that it blew that reporter away. Still, it blew him away so bad he is scared to death of us now. That's how we are a sign and a wonder to the world. Because from God's eyes, I am 1,000 times worse than the worst that Jim could be. The scriptures say, come now, let us reason together. Let's reason. If you want to reason, let's reason. If you want to make sense of the world, let's make sense. The highest that reason can take you is chaos. Whether it's high energy physics, whether it's chemistry, whether it's mathematics, no matter whether it's philosophy, the highest it can take you is chaos. And really, the fruit of that then is the highest that it can take me is that my sin is as scarlet. Now that has to be in every possible arena of life. I have to so push every arena, my best ideas, my best fantasies, my best things, I have to push it all the way to the end. I have to multiply it to the edge of time and space, which that's what it means to expand your tent. Take your reason, take your desire for thought to the highest it can go. And you'll find that the only thing you will find is that you are the chief of sinners. You know, I noticed that you wanted to read the Norman Grubb articles in that thing. But you sent me a note on that, right? Well, Norman Grubb is fine, except he never quite got it. He was my spiritual father. But he never lived like we do. He never got the mystery of body. If you read everything he wrote, this mystery of Christ in you, the hope of glory, was never tested by living in community. When I saw that 20 years ago, I've not read another word by Norman Grubb because it was wonderful for a time, but now it's not enough because it's still the salvation of the isolated self. It's still trying to make me feel good about myself, about having some kind of self-esteem. my philosophies, my ideas are just garbage. The way I feel about somebody or something is meaningless. And until you understand that, you're going to still remain an island in the sea, alone. And as long as you're here, I will keep picking on you because I hate that. I don't want you to be on an alone island. Establishing your own rightness. Trying to find your identity in life. If that's what you want to do, then I encourage you to go do it. Push it as far as it can be instead of living in your mind. In your imagination. I'm talking, not just talking to you, it's going to everybody. That we must live by faith which worketh. Worketh meaning it's energized by love. If I sat down and tried to use my value judgments on everybody here, no one would meet them. Because and I would finesse myself because I wouldn't judge myself. And so I would end up thinking that I'm better than everybody, which is the biggest lie of the universe. Because if I can sit in judgment of one, I soon will sit in judgment of two. That's the nature of the beast. And then three, and then four. Does that communicate? What's your response to it? You can't just... Your response has to be... It has to be the same as Christ was when he was hanging on the cross and saying, God, God, why have you forsaken me? And there's no answer. Except the resurrection of Christ. There isn't an answer that you can come up with. That's why, from the spiritual standpoint, the only evidence, the evidence of love is waiting. Abiding. Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor entered into the heart of man that which God hath prepared for them that love him. New Testament, Old Testament, that wait on him. Therefore, ergo, from Paul, the greatest expositor of Scripture that has ever lived, from Paul's standpoint, the only evidence of love is waiting. They're synonymous. Not my feelings about it, not my judgments about it, not my thinking about it. My waiting. What am I waiting for? I'm waiting for the resurrection to be manifested in every nook and cranny and deep and hidden place in my being so there's no more me. So no stimulus can cause a response in me that it used to cause. Because I'm a new creature. I'm not even a human being anymore. If any man is in Christ, he is totally new. I've put off the old. I've left the old behind. But they have this enemy. This mortal enemy. We carry around this mortal enemy of God. It's called the instead of Christ. It's called Michael Carlson. Why do you think you're on the point so often? Because I love to pick on you? It's because you are totally rebellious. You live in witchcraft. And you want me to soothe you. The basis of your life is witchcraft.
It seems like you want some response, and I don't know what it is. All I can say is I understand what you're saying, and I agree.
Then how can you ever again trust your thoughts? How can you again ever again trust your wants? How can you do anything but lay down your life for your brethren? That's why it says so clearly, if you say you love God and hate your brethren, or don't lay down your life for them, or lay down your life for your neighbor, then you're a liar. You've been deceived. You're masquerading as an angel of light. What I want from you is the same as I want from everyone else. That they would see through the vanity and futility of their own mind, which is their greatest enemy, and start living by faith instead of by want. Let me give you one example. You and Harry and I sat in my office and we had an agreement. And the agreement was that, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, if there was nothing that was emergency, then it was fine for you to work for the union. Right? That's what we agreed. 10 minutes later, you changed your mind and you said, no, what I really want to do is work for the union 2 or 3 times a week. Now, who's in control here? Don't you see? Your mind is in control. If you want to work out there 2 or 3 times a week, then you should work 5 times a week out there. And stop kidding yourself about being a Levite and living and working for the foundation. If that's what you want to do, then you should go do it and do it with everything in you to find out there is no there there. There's no there in having the freedom to want to go to Colorado whenever you want to go, or whenever you want to do this, or whenever you want to do that. Because there is no laying down your life, or so you will never be fulfilled. You will be like the ocean. It can never be filled. It's just one want after another. You came here because you were desperate. Alone. You've tried all your whole life trying to get it right, trying to get fulfillment, and it never worked. Now I thought that you saw the futility of that. You and I sat on the porch and I told you that. I said, don't come here. Don't come to work for the, if there's something else you want to do. Do you remember me telling you that? Don't waste your time and don't waste my time. So you get here a little while. And then pretty soon, well, I'd like to go do this. Then I'd like to go do that. Then I want to go over there, and then I want to go over there. Then why did you come here?
Well, like you said, because I was lonely.
Right.
I needed a body.
And you found one. But then you started believing your minds again. You started following your wants. And so, who's in control then? Is that what you want? For how long now? Is this no go? Until you get alone and you want to start following your mind again? Do you really, really, really know that your mind is the mortal enemy of God? And if it's the mortal enemy of God, then it's the mortal enemy of Christ in you. It can do nothing but crucify Him afresh. That's the best your mind can do, is crucify Him again. Is there something at the core of your belly that understands that? That you are the Antichrist? That your only hope is to die to self?
I think I've been seeing that the last couple of weeks. It upsets me.
Then if it upsets you to the point where you can't accept that, then you need to go.
Well,
if you know that it's true, then you must live it. You must bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Every single thought has to stand against, it is perfect, I own all things, I have been perfected by one offering, it is finished, there is nothing left to do except rest in Him and lay down my life. There's no other choice. If you know you, can you imagine that the saddest thing to me is people, and they all get mad at me, so I'm not going to worry about that, but people that have left, but they can't leave, because it's something has hit, something has sparked that they know that their mind is the Antichrist, the instead of Christ, and yet they're out there alone. That's the saddest thing to me in the universe. And I'm afraid for you that that's where you're going to end up. Because even though you know it, there's an unwillingness to lay down your life for the people here. If there's a need and your wants win. And that's sad. We didn't have Bible study this morning.
Something just occurred to me. I believe it did, Mike, about wanting to work for the union 2 or 3 days a week. That way, you wouldn't belong to or be responsible to the union, and you wouldn't be responsible here. You get two different worlds, and you can play one against the other. It's like kids do with parents, where they've got two parents that aren't communicating. Well, mommy said or daddy said, it's going to Joy Santa for a ruling on something that you think you'll get an appropriate ruling from Joy Santa on, going to me for something. It's a way to not be responsible and dead anyplace.
The union doesn't need or require responsibility.
No, it's not that. You don't understand. It's not understanding that this is a place to die to self. If you don't want to do it, I don't care. I'm not going to be mad at you. I'm not going to be. But if you want to just live here and go work, that's fine. But don't do both. Because then you've got a foot in each world. And for you, you have to be one place or another. That's the way you're made up. I mean, there's a jillion people that can have regular jobs and come, and you know, that's fine, they can do that. And then your faith and Levites are supposed to be they're supposed to be the model. They're supposed to even be the ones that teach the teachers. And they teach them by their life. I mean, we don't go there for it. But your life, a Levite, is supposed to be one who has seen the mystery and desires to live it. One who shows the body that there is no need for the things that they want. That you can be fulfilled without it. And it's, you know, there's no merit in them anymore than there's any merit in anything else. I want you to, where's Carolyn? There's two memorandas about Levites that you know what I'm talking about. I want him to read those. If you do nothing else, then if you don't want to be a Levite, then, but this is you're on point. It's come to a head, in my opinion. Okay?
Yeah.
I want you to read those two memoranda. And then we'll talk with you and I and Harry and see whether or not this is what you want. But you've got to understand what it means. To me, it's a huge privilege to have revised the Levites.
It's like so some point, sometime, somehow, you've got to make a commitment instead of just being a butterfly that goes from flower to flower. With your family, the union here, who cares where, but someplace you've got to.
You've got to wait. You've got to find some place to wait for the revelation of Christ to be made manifest. Oh, I didn't know that. No, I'm kidding you.
I didn't realize that was a big thing.
Well, it's everything.
Remember the first meeting that we had? The Levite is not a job, it's a given life.
No, that we normally have had two kinds of Levites. We've had the Levites that have taken a vow of poverty, and we've had the Levites that have come here and for various reasons. They just wanted to be a Levite for a while. It was either meet some emotional or financial or some spirit, some kind of need.
No. I see something here in that last night while we're doing our volunteer for food service and take in cash places and stuff. Michael volunteered, made some, efforts to, I'll do it, but it was all with reluctance. And that's a picture for everyone that, I'm a disciple, but I'm a reluctant disciple. It's like being on the edge of the cliff and knowing it's right to jump off, but maybe reluctancy of
well, it makes you not dependable to God or to the world or anybody else because you got your foot in both worlds.
Right. And that's important to see that.
Yeah.
Outwardly, you're doing a lot of the things, and that's fine. This morning is to penetrate some depth of it.
Jim, you were going to say something? Let me tell you a story.
Even now, when I came down on these obligations and I went up and talked to the Rutledge, I said, man, I need to go find a job, pay these bills off. And then they said, well, thank you. I just never went back because I know that's not, I can't do that because there's always other ways of handling things and going and trying to do two jobs. I can't do it. Somebody else might be able to. That even separates me even more.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. Trust me, I couldn't do it either.
I tried. It didn't work.
But let me, the penultimate example of this is Mark Miller. And if you're listening, Mark, God bless you wherever you are. Mark, when we were still, this was mid-80s, we were still holding meetings over there in Rutledge's grandparents' home where they had allowed me to live there because of some reason. And we were holding meetings there. And so Mark Miller he was the kind of guy that he was movie star good looks. He was a good enough tennis to be a pro. I mean, he was like, anything. He was like everybody wanted to be when they were a teenager. Huh? Golden boy. And he started coming to Bible study. And he just... Then he decided, he finished SMU and he needed to go back to what he... His father got him a seat on the Chicago board, the Chicago Mercantile, Board of Trade. Chicago, huh? What's
Mercantile
it called?
Exchange? Chicago Board of Trade?
CBOA? Yeah.
Chicago Board of Options?
Yeah. His father bought him a seat on it. And he had, ever since he was like 17 years old, he wanted to have $1 million in cash. He wanted to hold $1 million that belonged to him. And so he was trading euros, I think, is what he specialized in, trading, you know, the arbitrage between money trades. That's how he's making his money. He's making a fortune. He made about $450,000 until his brother stole it. But when he started doing this and started, he would listen to the tapes every day, or so how often Harry sent them to him. And then finally one day he called me and said, "Ole, I can't do both. I cannot listen to these tapes and make my goal of having $1 million. And so I'm not going to listen to the tapes anymore, so I'll tell Harry not to send them anymore." That's a perfect example.
That's the most honest anybody ever is in that situation.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't do this.
I'm not saying he's.
People just slink away.
I'm not saying they're not saved or not. That's not our business. It means this may not be the body. This may not be the place for you to find or to consider home, or the earthly matrona. Not you in general, but you universally. This isn't for everybody, and everybody, we're certainly not the keepers of truth. As I've said so often, but we have to be faithful to what we see. For the other's benefit, what we are doing is for the Mark Millers of the world, for the John Blooms, not only them, it's and what they're doing is for our benefit. But we have to be faithful to what we see. That's the only thing that matters. If the First Baptist Church, if people there are being faithful to what they see, God bless them. And so it's not about salvation. It's not about, it's a place where you fall into the ground and you know this is home. When we did that used to be one of the questions before anybody, we did what's called an asset tithe. That the question is, do you know this is home? If they could answer yes, they know that this is home, and it was truthful, you know, then that's great. That's wonderful. But everybody that's here doesn't know this is home. And eventually, but most of those people don't work for the foundation. It took Ronnie like 9 years before he found out this was home. Am I communicating to anybody?
I guess my answer to all these things you're saying is, my mind is resisting it right now, but I know it's different. I don't want to resist it.
And then you
understand what you're saying. I can agree with it. So I don't know what it is. I don't like it. But.
Well, I don't like it either. If I believe, my mind has resisted this to the ultimate. The mystery is, stop living by your mind and start living by faith. But you can't do that until you know your mind is a lying bastard. Oh, it's worse than that. It's a lying whore.
I suggest that you take some time and honestly and coldly and clearly evaluate where you have come from, what you have done, who you are, what you do, and where it looks like you're headed.
Well, I mean,
it sounds like you ought to stop and look in the mirror and start being honest with yourself instead of making believe.
No, you've got whatever it is that you want. If you think you want it, and it can't be resolved by confession, or it can't be resolved by seeing it through other people, if their experience can't benefit you in that arena so that there's empathy, then you've got to go do it. That's the only answer. Otherwise, you will live your life in these other universes, and you'll never be real. You'll just be floater. So it's simply You, only you can do it. Everybody has to face this. If you don't, then you will live a life of regret. And living a life of regret produces a life of quiet desperation. All right? So when you just, I'm not asking you to do it today. You know, you just, if what you think you want can't be excised, can't be repented of, then you have to go do it. But if you, what you think you want has been done by somebody that's in that you, that's here, and they can show you and talk you and show you the stupidity of it, unless you, you know, unless there's, maybe you're a sociopath and you have no capacity for empathy. I'm just, that's a little joke. Because if you can't empathize with someone else's experience, that's really dangerous. Because it means, fundamentally, it means you believe you're special. And if you were in that position, you would do better. It's like, you know, all those homeless people. I'll tell you one goddamn thing, if I were president, this is what we would do. Or like Harry. Harry's like a homeless person that has a home. Because he's got an opinion. I'll tell you, this is how this needs to be done. There's a right way and there's a wrong way. God damn it. Well, if I let the real me out, I'd out Harry. But I know that that's an evil son of a bitch. Anybody else?
I can't help thinking about this thing that you said somewhere in the middle of all this, of Jesus on the cross saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? There was no answer, but the answer was the resurrection. And that's the way it is. When it gets down in our minds to, you know, we've got some question, it's the ultimate question, and it's not answered with words or reasonings or any of that stuff. It's answered simply by one thing, the resurrection. It's just, that's wild.
Amen. That's why this incredible scripture is that which makes manifest is light, and light is the resurrection. So anything else is just a vain shadow. Reason is unreasonable because you're not honest enough to take it all away.
I remember when I think I've been in this situation a few times.
One or two.
And just hearing it now again, it's like.
Anybody else?
And just on that point, it's like when you're being honest, you can't say, well, this is what I should think. And even though I think this, that's not good, so I'm going to try and think this. You get into resistance with your mind, and it doesn't work. You have to say what it is, and then if God will.
Well, that's why, when we used to have meetings with me, I'd ask you to write down 50 things you like and 50 things you don't like without any judgments, not whether you should like them or not like them. And it helps clarify.
Yeah, then the Spirit of God can move.
Because otherwise you lie to yourself.
Yeah, you're trying to make yourself over into what you think is a Christian.
That's what I was thinking. That's pretty much exactly what I was thinking when you were talking. I should...
And no, I don't. That won't work. You can't agree until you agree.
And you have to face the darkness of being very disagreeable, because in fact you are disagreeable, and your soul is on the line. And so, to save your soul, you'll try and think different, but God's not there. You've got to have the courage to go to hell.
Anything from the eastern section of the world? Anything from the Far East over here? All right, take it, big guy.
Last word.